Harry, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Ruby. Good to be here.
Oh, my pleasure. Now, what are some of the main findings and recommendations that were brought up in the report?
I'll just mention straight away, obviously, that today's Invasion Day, and so I think it's really important for everyone who is listening to the station today to make sure that they reflect on that, and if they can't get to a protest today or a rally because of COVID restrictions, that you consider donating money to organisations like the Aboriginal Legal Service. So I'll just put that out there straight away, sorry, if that's all right.
And just go to their website. If you do go to the rallies, go to their website because they have a lot of information on what your rights are if you are going to the rallies.
100%, that's right. Yeah, no, sorry, thanks for that. So in terms of, could you ask the question again, sorry?
No, it's so fine. What were some of the main findings and recommendations that were brought up in the report?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so the report progresses the groundbreaking Uluru Statement of the Heart, which was handed down in 2017. And as you noted, that Uluru Statement called for a First Nations voice to be put in the Constitution, as well as a process of truth-telling and treaty-making around Australia. Listeners might know that the government dismissed calls for treaty-making and truth-telling and has so far resisted a push to put the First Nations voice in the Constitution. So they've sort of been pretty clear that they're not really interested in progressing the statement. What they did do, though, is they sent it to a senior advisory body that was led by Professors Marcia Langton and Tom Calmer. And they've spent a year now working, having consultations and deliberating with a large group of Indigenous and non-Indigenous peoples around the country. And they've put together design options for what a First Nations voice could look like. Importantly, although they weren't able to talk about constitutional entrenchment, about putting it in the Constitution, they have sort of been clear to say that really is probably one of the more important ways that the body could be effective. So they haven't really been able to talk about it, but if you read the report, you can see that that's something that underpins a lot of the discussion they're having. What they suggested, what they proposed, was a two-level process, so a national voice and a series of local and regional voices. And the real benefit of this is, obviously, Australia is a big country and a lot of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander nations around the country, and they're all going to be diverse in aspirations, diverse in circumstance, and it's really important that people at all levels have their voices heard and their issues considered. And so a two-level voice, a national body and then local and regional bodies, provided there are good links between the two, provided there's a good relationship with the Parliament and with the government, should ensure that local issues and national issues are considered and well ventilated.
Of course. And so how does your upcoming book coincide with the topics kind of mentioned in the report?
Yeah, so my book looks at, tries to look at a history of Indigenous political thought in Australia and globally, and looks at, is there a way to listen closely to Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander peoples and Indigenous peoples more broadly? How do we understand their aspirations for political reform? And then would a First Nations voice or would an Indigenous representative body meet those aspirations? And I look at bodies that have existed previously, like ATSIC in Australia, as well as bodies overseas, like the Swedish Sami Parliament. And I look closely at how they operated, continue to operate in the Sami Parliament's case, and see whether they are effective institutions in practice. Do they actually allow Aboriginal people or Indigenous peoples to have a say over issues that affect them in Parliament? And then looking at the theory and the practice, I've put together a series of questions about design or issues about design that would need to be considered when building a body in Australia for today to make sure that is effective. And so a lot of the issues that I discuss are ones that are raised by the report. Most importantly, I think, is this idea about constitutional entrenchment.
Of course. And so, what kind of conclusions did you come to in researching for your book?
So I think there are two key conclusions. The first one is that a First Nations voice will only be effective if it's put in the Constitution. And this is because it needs to have there needs to be some obligation on government or on the Parliament to listen to the voice or to engage with the voice. So previous bodies in Australia, like ATSIC, the body in Sweden, the Swedish Sami Parliament, if the Parliament or if the government of the day doesn't want to listen to Indigenous peoples, they don't engage with the bodies, they don't engage with these voices, and there's no obligation, no legal obligation or political obligation to require them to. And so they aren't effective. So the only way that these bodies will be effective is if the Parliament actually is forced to listen to them, or the government is forced to engage with them. And the only way that, and this is what the proponents of the Uluru Statement from the Heart recognised, the only way that the government can be forced or can be made to listen to the body, to listen to Aboriginal people, is if it's put in the Constitution. And that's because in Australia, putting a body like this in the Constitution requires a referendum. And for a referendum to succeed, you need the majority of Australians voting in favour. And so the key point here is, if Australians want the Parliament, want our government to listen to Aboriginal people when passing laws that affect Aboriginal people, it's important that it's put to the Australian people and the Australian people vote for it. And that won't impose a legal obligation on Parliament, but it will impose a moral and political obligation, because the government would know that Australians want them to listen to Aboriginal people when passing laws that affect Aboriginal people. Without that, I think it's going to be too easy for the government just to ignore the body, and it won't be effective. And I guess that's the key conclusion, is that a First Nations voice really should be put in the Constitution. Now, the government has made clear that they're not interested in that, but that doesn't mean that we can't keep putting pressure on them, and we can't write to our local members, write to Minister Ken Wyatt, write to the Prime Minister if you want to, and say that you think it's important that the First Nations voice be put in the Constitution.
Absolutely.
The second key conclusion, I guess, is that at the end of the day, a First Nations voice will only be one mechanism. And so even though, even if it's as effective as it possibly can be, it's only going to be one thing. And I think the other key conclusion is that it needs to be supported by a range of complementary mechanisms. And this is, again, what the Uluru Statement recognised. So there needs to be a series of treaties around the country and a genuine engagement with the truth of what happened to this country and what continues to happen. And, Invasion Day is a difficult day for many Aboriginal people around the country. But I think it's sort of important to reflect on days like today and think about what should the country look like, and how would a country that really deals with the truth of what happened, how would we go about doing that? So I think the key other thing is that a First Nations voice should be established, put in the Constitution, and it should be complementary to treaties and truth in this country.
Absolutely. And last but certainly not least, just to elaborate a bit on that last one as well, I guess, what steps do you think need to be taken now moving forward in order to introduce a First Nations voice into lawmaking and policymaking?
So I think really the main thing that everyone can do, everyone who's listening, is to reach out to your local member. Write them a letter, write them an email and say that you think it's important that the First Nations voice be put in the Constitution. The government's committed to this process, but it's only going to legislate the body at the end of the day. There may well be an election later in this year, and so I don't think that a First Nations voice will be put in legislation before the end of the year. So it may well be up to the next government to put it in Parliament, to put it in law or put it in the Constitution. So I think the main thing we can all do, just like everyone who's out marching in rallies today, is put pressure on government, put pressure on Parliament, because ultimately they represent their constituents, they represent us, and so we're the ones who should be out there and telling them that we want this.
Absolutely. Governments should be for the people and not for their personal interests. Harry, thank you so, so much for joining me on the show today. It's been really great having such an important conversation about this.
All right, thank you, Ruby.
My pleasure.